Hello, Carl.
Hi, Sue. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, you've just come back off tour, haven't you, with Asia?
Yes, we were in America. We went off to South America. Then we went off to sort of Eastern sort of Europe, as it were. You know, we sort of played, well, right through sort of, well, you name it, and we ended up in Malaga. That's what happened.
That's good stuff.
Which was quite a hard tour, actually, with South America and straight out again. But, you know, it's a lot of fun, and we're obviously promoting the Asia Omega album, which we started last year. We released it last year, and we did, you know, various festivals in America, concerts and stuff. Went back this year and then tagged on Europe and sort of the European side of stuff, and we obviously we played South America as well, which is something we don't do every year.
I think drumming is probably the new workout, really, isn't it, for gentlemen and ladies, of course.
It could be, yeah. I mean, it, yesterday I was in Leeds, and it's the new workout for young children, because after they've had 45 minutes with me banging drums, they don't really want to do too much except sit down and be quiet. So the teachers all like that.
Oh, bless. Well, that's great, because we were just talking to Anthony Rosa about the fact that he's brought out a drum solos DVD about you, which is instructional, it's educational. It's also got some brilliant footage from 1974.
Yeah, well, what the story was there, to tell you the truth, there's lots of instructional DVDs on the shelf. You know, there must be like 4,000 or 5,000, and you can get anything you want at the moment. Mm. And I obviously didn't want to do the same thing, so I thought I'd take all the historical solos over the last 40 years that I've been known to play in the different environments and whatever, with ELP and so forth and so forth. A couple of YouTube clips as well, actually, on there, and put them all together. And because the people have asked me, you know, about drum solos over the years, and how do you do this, how do you do that? So I thought if we could come up with a routine where we could actually slow it down 50%, 75%, and give people the notation and the sticking and whatever, it would be a different kind of instructional DVD, which is what I did. I did it with a friend of mine called Eric Fisher.
Yeah.
And that's how it came together, really. It's just trying to sort of, it's a market that's been going for a long time. That's why the players that we get in England or around the world are so good, because there's so many instructional DVDs. I just tried to get something out there which is a little bit different. Normally, you can't slow DVDs down, but this one is specifically set up so you can reduce it in increments, and then you'll actually see what's going on rather than have to keep on rewinding it. You can slow it down as you go, so to speak. So that was the deal, and there's no book with it. It's a PDF, and you download the notation when you want it, so that keeps the price down for the people out there and makes it a little more interesting, so you only use and get whatever you want, you know, at the time. Every time you put it on, you can just take down some more notation as you go along.
Now, when you're creating drum solos, how does that happen for you?
It's just an experience thing. I mean, over a period of years, you build up a vocabulary of sort of patterns, of things, of impressions, of influences. And when, you know, when the lights go on, you're on, and that's it. And you just start to play, and that's all it is. Obviously, there are landmarks in a drum solo. I've always had landmarks in my drum solo. I've always looked at them as a piece of music, as far as I'm concerned. And there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end. And then there's lots of stuff which goes on in between all of that I'm not too sure what it's going to be, but that's the excitement of it all, and that's why it's different every night, which is obviously important.
Fantastic. Now, of course, also coming up, the 40th anniversary reunion concert from Concert One of you at High Voltage, which was really a kind of like big headline for the High Voltage first festival last year.
Yes, well, it was the first High Voltage prog rock festival, and we were very happy to sort of go on it. It was a great time for ELP. As you know, I played on the Saturday with Asia, so
yeah.
It was double bubble for the Palmer that weekend, and he was very, very happy. ELP played the Sunday night, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It's a great place to play. I'm not too sure how many more festivals will go on there. I know that they've had several over the years, Music Box or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I know there's another one this year. It was great. Obviously, in a residential area, we had to sort of calm our set down by about 15 to 20 minutes. We couldn't play the full hour 50. Mm. We only played an hour and a half because there was a curfew at 10:30. So that was the only real problem. Apart from that, we had a great time doing it. A lot of rehearsal, a bit too much for me personally, but it was a lot of fun, and it was great to play the last sort of concert back here in England, you know, to celebrate the 40th and to say thanks to all of the English fans that gave us the chance in the first place.
Absolutely. And I remember, you know, because you, when you're in a queue and that, you get chatting to women. Well, at least I do, you know, sort of saying, and she sort of said, I never thought I'd be at a festival when, you know, where my entire LP collection is. And also, Emerson, Lake and Bob, I can't wait to see them. And that was a general excitement, which is great. And of course,
it was a big nostalgia day, that's for sure. And we knew exactly what it was going to be like. I mean, we hadn't played for 12 years. And you know, we did the very best that we could do, and it was filmed.
Which is coming out as well.
You've been part of that. That's going to be out soon. And there's it'll be released separately, you know, music file, that's available. I mean, there it is. It's kind of the end of the Emerson, Lake and Palmer story. But it was a great way to put it all together. We enjoyed it.
Hang on, I've got to get this one in. But Carl Palmer bangs on, don't you?
Well, I do, only because I just feel that I kind of need to, you know. I'm always trying to sort of prove my point, and I've managed to have a great sort of like 5-6 years with Aisha so far. I've had my own band since 2001, and I'm back to America this year with my own band, promoting the works of Volume 3. I'll be back in England the first time in about 5 years, November the 25th, and I'm going right through to the 5th of December. I'm playing 10 concerts.
Which is lovely as well, because you're coming to, we've got you at Southend on the 27th of November.
Yes, we have.
Norwich on the 30th.
Yeah.
Ipswich on the 3rd and Milton Keynes on the 4th, which is really good.
In case you miss me, I've got 3 dates in there. There's no way, you've no excuse now from you.
Indeed, at
you
all.
You must be able to get to one of those. In actual fact, we're starting on the 24th at Gateshead.
Yeah.
The Sage. And we'll finish up in Milton Keynes, which is, incidentally, it's a small venue, because normally I'm playing quite a few theatres now.
Yeah.
But the Stables is actually is sort of, I don't know what it is. Might be to do with the original people that started that whole project off. Who, you
it's
know,
wonderful.
The Banquet family, who are just great musicians, and they've done an awful lot for the industry. It's just got a great feeling about it. So I thought that would be. It's also close to home as well, because then you live down the road in Hertfordshire.
Which
so I thought on the last night I could get home quickly.
Nice. Well, let's hear something else from Working Live Volume 3, because we heard a bit of pictures at an exhibition. But I particularly like this because it's Peter Gunn. I hope I've got the right bit of the track on.
Okay.
It kind of goes in together because it really is Working Live, and it really does take you through that experience of Carl Palmer. But obviously, in the flesh, there you are. And you have a passion for being in a trio, don't you?
Being in a trio has always been something that has been a great experience for me, generally. I've been in many of them now. I started off my professional career here in London with Chris Farlow. As you know, was
that
number one single out of Time, written by Keith Richards, Mick Jagger. And eventually the Thunderbirds went from 7 to 4 down to a trio, plus obviously Chris singing. And that was when I first experienced Hammond organ and lead guitar, and the Hammond organ played bass pedals and things, and myself, and that was a trio, and I really enjoyed it. So when I got the opportunity to go on and move to Arthur Brown, I kind of was leaning that way anyway, because the Crazy World was bass guitar, keyboards and drums, and Arthur singing. It was a trio of musicians. So that was great for me. And of course, then I formed my own band, my first group, which was the Atomic Rooster, and that was a trio,
fantastic,
organ, bass and drums again. And I went on from there, and my own group, as you know today, is a trio, and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, well, that was a trio. The only four-piece band I've ever played in for any length of time has been Aisha. And, of course, I've been with Aisha now. Next year, we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary, by the way.
Will you? My goodness, another
excuse
for another tour. Let's hear a bit of Peter Gunn anyway,
okay,
Carl. We'll come right back to you.
All right.
Carl Palmer Band live, and I have to say that actually that was Romeo and Juliet, wasn't it, Carl?
That was, yeah. But you know something, I love it, and I know that you're going to play Peter Gunn later anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And also,
in actual fact, I played Romeo and Juliet, that particular version, last year on my American tour, and this year when I go out in October, we've changed the programme around a little bit. I don't think I'll actually be playing that one, but I'll be playing Pictures at an Exhibition and Tarkus and Peter Gunn and so forth. That in actual fact was recorded originally by ELP and many, many other people, and it just seemed to suit guitar, you know, at the time.
Isn't he a fantastic player, the guitar player in your band? Tell us about him.
The lead guitar player is Paul Bielatovich. He's been with me approximately 6-7 years, and the bass player has been with me since last June, Simon Fitzpatrick. He just graduated from the guitar school in Acton, which is one of the big schools here in London, been going for many years. And, I mean, these are just like the best of the British young players, to tell you the truth. Because I don't know if you know, but the standard we have in England is really incredibly high, you know.
It's astonishing,
In actual fact,
isn't it?
I'm always talking to a friend of mine, which is a friend of yours too, Mike Innes, who takes all my photographs and does all of the posters. Actually, he's done the new poster for this Pictures at an Exhibition tour. And we're always talking about how great the musicians are, you know, today, that don't really have the chance that we had years ago. And these two guys, obviously, you know, I'm one of the few outlets for playing instrumental prog rock music. It's just not... Well, there are modern sort of progressive rock bands, but as you know, it's really hard for them to get on the radio. It's really hard for them to get the gigs that they want. And we do have some great bands like Porcupine Tree and
Fantastic.
Spock Spears and Dream Theatre.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are there, but, you know, they're not. It's not like it used to be. So I'm one of the few outlets for all the young musicians that are coming up. And as I say, the two guys that I've got are just exceptional. They really are great.
Aren't they just? You're very lucky.
Yeah, I am really lucky, but I'll tell you what the story is. If we didn't have the education in this country that we've got as far as academies and institutes for learning instruments, which now are some of the best in the world here in England, if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have the high standard. The standard in England is just incredibly high. And years ago, you only ever had... You had the Royal College, you had the Royal Academy, which I went to, and the Guildhall, which I went to. Now you've got so many other institutes, like... Paul Bielatowicz, the guitar player, was teaching at BIM, the Brighton Institute of Music, for many years. And he went to the Guild, the Guildford Institute of Music, as a student. And these are all individual places now. They've got the same curriculum as the Royal Academy. The exams are all valid and all mean exactly the same. But there's just more places to go with basically younger teachers, people with a more modern approach. And, you know, it's just made the musicians in this country so advanced. And it's noticeable, and I'm really grateful for it.
Well, you've got, you know, such a passion about it. Do you ever stop, you know, when it comes to playing the drums? Because you're very, very fit.
Well, I play the ukulele a lot when I'm not playing the drums.
Of course,
it drives everyone crazy in the house. But I don't.
Oh, brilliant. Well, you've got to come in and play your ukulele.
I promise I can play my ukulele any time you want. Yes.
Right. Well, you promised you were going to come into the studio.
One of the days I'll come in and I'll play a tune on my ukulele.
Fantastic.
I'm a big George Formby fan, you see. I'll tell you what the story is. I actually started on ukulele, which I've never actually said this before. I've been to many people, because everybody thinks I started on violin when I was 11, which I did, because my grandfather's a professor of music at the Royal Academy. Started on violin, wasn't very good, and I found, I always crack the same joke, I found that the violin sounded better when I banged it. So I figured, hey, I might be a drummer. So that's how that moved. But years before that, my dad used to keep a banjo up in his bedroom, and I used to sneak in there and look at the little chord charts and things, and I used to try and play the banjo, and I used to play a couple of little tunes on it, which I could play. But they never wanted me to be a banjo player, because it was always considered like a party instrument and not serious because of George Formby. But I've kind of gone back to it after all these years, because I just love it, you know.
So I think George Formby was a genius, actually. And the other thing as well is that you say that, but from the Zombies, kickball player. He actually revealed that he's really into ballroom dancing now.
Well, I mean, that's fantastic.
What's wrong with that?
I mean,
yeah,
we've
Rod
got to come
Argent,
out with these. We've all got one in the cupboard, haven't we? Mine happens to be George Formby and playing the ukulele.
Fantastic! Yeah. Can you do all the roles and everything like that?
I can. I'm a great fan. Yeah, I can do all of that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, tell you the story with YouTube these days. You can learn anything that you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I do make a point of going onto YouTube just to investigate all the young drummers, all the new stuff that's happening. At least once a month, I will spend a good 2 hours just combing YouTube and gathering information. translation. It's the musical sort of dictionary of the world, really. You know, everything is there that you want. You just have to type in and off you go, you know. It's brilliant. It's lovely.
So how many ukuleles do you have, Carl?
I have a ukulele which is made by an American company called Martin, which is probably the most expensive one you can get. And then that's a ukulele. But I have a banjo-lele, which is basically a George Formby banjo. Small, looks like a ukulele, but it's a banjo. It's got like a calf head on it and things. And I hate to say it, but I've got the George Formby B model.
Have you? So it's a vintage one as well.
But I have, yes.
No, don't be sorry. Don't be ashamed, Carl. It's out there now.
Well, let me just tell you, I changed the strings today, so I'm a proud man.
Whoa! Have you got it by the phone?
I haven't got anything very close to the phone at the moment. Oh. No. But I will bring it in one day. One day, sort of over the next sort of 12 months,
excellent.
I'll come in and give you a couple of tunes.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely.
We shall love that.
I would wait till you hear it first.
Well, no, that'd be good fun as well.
Absolutely.
Do you think that anybody can learn to play a set of drums?
Yeah, to tell you the truth, if you can count to one, you're in business. Mm. If you can tap your foot in time, you're in business. Learning to play drums is not difficult. It's very primal. It's a very animalistic type of instrument. If you want to understand the technical side of it, and which it is incredibly deep and involved, it's a lifetime study. Mm. If you want to play a rhythm and you want to be able to play reasonably well so you could be in a band and you could do, you know, you could play whatever's in the top 10, for example, probably if you put your head down, you could do it in 6 months. If you wanted to really learn how to play the snare drum, if you really wanted to learn the technical aspects, you wanted to understand the history, where it's all come from, and be able to apply all these various rhythms and whatever we're talking about, you know, from whatever generation of player, it's a lifetime study, there's no doubt about that. And of course, you know, everyone thinks you just pick up a pair of sticks and you just bang a drum, but, you know, we use our forearm, we use our wrists, we use our fingers for bouncing the stick in conjunction with it gets very technical.
If
you just want to learn just to play a rhythm in time, it's relatively easy, that's for sure. I never make it any kind of mystery. A lot of drummers, you know, get a bit sort of like, it's very difficult, you've got to be careful, it's not that easy. But it's not, it's very simple, really. What's difficult is when you take it on to the next level, and the next level is just, it's just a minefield of problems, you know. There's a certain way to sit, there's a certain height to sit, there's a certain way you really should have your cymbals. If you just want to understand the kind of the logistical thing, how you move around, that in itself is complicated. Because I've been playing now since I was 11, and I'm quite old, as you well know, and I've got no back problems, I've got no arm problems, I'm fine. It's only because everything is set up so ergonomically, it's perfect, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you ever been injured by a drum kit at
all?
Well,
no, I've been injured by falling off the stage. I mean, I got a thing come through the other day. I think it was The Guardian that wanted the worst moment, the worst gig you ever did. Mm. Well, the worst gig I ever did was at the end of the 70s with Emerson, Lake and Palmer. We all came to the front of the stage to take the bow. And whilst this is happening, what should happen is the stage would open up behind us and up would come a grand piano for the encore. Well, we were all standing at the front. The stage opened up. The grand piano was about to come up. I thought it was already there. I stepped back and I fell down the hole. And I kind of slid down this lid of the grand piano, which was still on the ground floor, as it were.
Ouch.
Fortunately, somebody caught me, but I did break my 11th rib. So I spent the night in hospital. And it was a place called Normal, Illinois. And, of course, there was nothing normal about that gig because I'd been woken up every hour and a half to see if there was any internal bleeding. But that was my worst gig, yeah.
Gosh, you were very lucky then in that case.
I was lucky, yeah. I might have been a bit drunk at the time. No, I'm teasing. I never drink before I play.
Well, it is a good thing. We need to bring my colleague from who's across in Suffolk into the conversation now because Nick Risby is on the show after that. And we have to sort of test this thing. And I'm sure he'd love to say hello to you. Nick Risby.
Hi.
Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Nick.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Well, I'm very, very honoured to speak, actually. I grew up with pictures and exhibition.
We knew there was someone, Nick. I'm so pleased I met you.
Yeah.
and the reason I bought the album was because of you, not the other guys. I've always loved drummers. As a big Keith Moon fan.
Yeah, no, I was too. He was quite a friend of mine. He's a very, very nice chap. Whatever you've heard about him, it's all true, and he was a nice guy as well.
But he sort of threw the rule book out of the window, didn't he?
He did. I'll tell you what he was. He was one. You know, he wasn't a great timekeeper. He didn't abide by any rules, and because because of that I loved him. But he was actually a very kind of avant-garde drummer. You know, he needed somebody like the Ox, you know, to keep him in time, as it were. And in the drumming world, we always refer to Keith Moon as the Elvin Jones of the rock drummers. Elvin Jones being one of the most famous sort of jazz drummers who, you know, never seemed to play in time, but everything seemed to work perfectly, and that was Keith Moon.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Good men. Also like Ron Tutt and Keith Olsen, Nigel Olsen and...
Nigel Olsen.
I tell you what, there's a lot of great drummers. We'd be here all night if you had to talk about them.
Yes, we would.
Anyway, what are you doing on your show, Mr. Risby?
Well, it's Tuesday night, so we always have a giggle on a Tuesday night, too. Gag of the Weeknight, Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Gag of the night.
I'll tell you what else we're doing tonight. We've got Peter Wren in Lowestoft has written to me with a great big list of songs. And, you know, we always every night play somebody's favourite songs, the Fab Five. And occasionally people put with their request of songs the reason they want them. And it's always fascinating as to why people like certain songs. So that's going to be interesting. Plus, of course, Tenuous Tunes. We're going to be celebrating... do you know it was this day back in 1948 the LP was introduced?
Was it really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, Columbia Records, yeah. 1948. Back in 1948.
Well, that's before my time, I'm very pleased to say that.
Yes, I've heard the stories about it.
Yeah, mine too. So we got that, we're going back to the 60s with a featured year, and we're going to have a lot of fun tonight, Sue.
Where in the 60s are you going to hit? What are you going to play in the 60s?
Well, couldn't possibly tell you the year, but I'll tell you some of the songs that we're going to play. We are going to be playing what we got here.
Don't you dare guess, Carl.
Anyway, I'm going to let you do a little secret, Nick. I go to a few of those 60 shows that happen around the UK. I tend to go there and see, you know, Carl, whoever it is, and the Mersey Beats and the Searchers. I'm big fans of those bands.
Oh, fantastic.
Brilliant. People love it then.
Yeah, all of that I tell you what, no one's going to like me after the show, the things that you are know, playing and the Searchers and, yeah, and Wayne Fontana. They're going to think, who is this guy? We thought he was a prog rock drummer.
You're rock and roll. Carl, stay right there. Nick, you enjoy your show. We need to go to travel at the moment. Now, let's go back to our conversation with Mr. Carl Palmer of the Carl Palmer Band as well, and Asia and all the other ones in between. But that's your primary thing now, isn't it, to think about Asia and also your own music.
Yeah,
How did you manage to separate?
It's hard to say the truth, but what we've been doing to make it Asia work for everybody, because obviously everyone's got different projects, the individual members of Asia, we sit down at the beginning of the, or the end of the year, and we plan out exactly what time we need to give to Asia. If Asia's got a new product, a new album, or a new DVD, or whatever, or a tour, we sit down and we allocate the time. We then realize that, you know, we've got 4 or 5 months we can control our own projects and do that. And it's worked for the last 6 years. And I've just finished now, halfway through the year, with Asia. Mm. We started at the beginning, and I've just finished now. And we will pick Asia up in January, February next year, when we're going to record a new studio album. Mm. And after that, we'll sort of end up sort of not doing anything until September 2012, and we'll play through till the end of the year. We'll play 4 months promoting the new album. It's also the 30th anniversary next year, so we're going to put a box set together with the re-release of the first Asia album, and we're going to put various things in the box, like the original T-shirt, obviously it'll be a copy, and some information and old pictures, and just make it, you know, a real sort of collector's item, as it were. We're also going to get together the 5 DVDs that we originally released with MTV. They're going to go in this box. So we've already had all of those meetings. We've had already arranged all of that, and we know it's January, February, September onwards. And in the interim period, you know, we'll all be doing our own stuff next year and whatever, and obviously still doing some interviews for Asia and talking about the box set and this and that. And this year, we're now finished, and I start again in August in Europe with my band, and September is off. October, I'm in America. And as you know, November, December, we have the English tour.
Yeah, fantastic. And in between that, you're playing ukulele.
In between that, I'm playing ukulele. And in between that, incidentally, yesterday, I got back on Saturday. I had sort of, I got back on Sunday, actually. And Monday, I went straight to Leeds because I've got a company called Drum Clinics UK. And what it is, it's a company that specializes in teaching deaf children and blind children, special needs children in general. And I had the opportunity to teach at a school in just outside of Leeds, north of Leeds. Special needs. So there's a chap who works with me called Frank Askew. We went up there and we played for this school, or taught in the school, a couple of sessions. And that, obviously that's something which I like to do, and I can't turn them down. I mean, I was quite tired, to tell you the truth, going all that way, because it's about a four-hour drive. But it was a great, great experience, and I've been doing it now for about 8 years. If anybody wants to sort of check some of the testimonials out and things, go onto my website and look at the column that the company's called Drum Clinics UK. And as I say, I've come up with a couple of programs for deaf children and for blind children, and they really work. And we had as many as 50 people, 50 young people in the room, two separate sittings, two separate groups, and it was great. And for me, it's really rewarding.
I do
master classes, you know, and I do business talks at universities, like I did one at Southampton last year, and they gave me a fellowship there, which was really nice.
That's great, isn't it?
I do all that type of stuff, and I do the drum clinics, but to be honest with you, one of the most rewarding things that I do, outside of what you generally know that I do, playing in my band and Asia and whatever, is teaching these special needs kids. And, you know, some of them are only four.
Wow.
Some of them are 16 to 18. And it's fantastic for me. I noticed that there was a bit of a gap in the marketplace, as it were, where, you know, special needs children can only ever be four or five in a group, but I can have as many as 12, 15 in my groups, and I have three groups. I have an A group, a B group, and a C group. So it's been a fantastic experience, and I don't do many a year, I must be honest with you. It's really just down to time, but maybe I get two or three in a year, depending on the availability. And obviously, it's quite a special thing, because I have to have helpers there with me and stuff. And, you know, these children, special needs, some of them come in with wheelchairs and oxygen bottles and things, you know, so it's quite involved.
It's a very special opportunity for the kids as well.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's a great opportunity, because they go home with a big smile on their face, you know. It's something that they just can't get within the environment that they're having to be in every day. And, of course, the Deaf Association and the Blind Association have realised that this is really quite important now, because how can you... They can't have this much fun when they're working with four or five children every day. When you're in a group of 15, suddenly it becomes a gang, and they're a gang, and I play them off against each other, you see, because I've got three gangs in the room. Before you know it, there's a lot of competition, and they're really trying hard to beat A group or beat C group or whatever.
Wow.
So it's a lot of fun, and it really is inspiring for me, because it's nothing to do with drumming. We just happen to use drums as the vehicle to bring us all together, you know.
How fantastic. And music does that so well, doesn't it? Now,
it does,
when people come and see you live with the Carl Palmer Band, there's always that famous intro that you do, which we're going to play, which is on the Working Live album, Volume 3. It's been absolutely fabulous talking to you, and I can't wait for you to get you in the studio with your ukulele.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, maybe I'll get my friend Mike Ince to come up and play guitar with me as well.
Ah, well, you never know. Anyway.
Okay.
Carl Palmer, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue.